And welcome to the Taylor Report. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I want to start off. I have an announcement to make that there is a benefit for Haitian flood and storm victims. There's, of course, a political crisis growing out of this. Everyone knows a hurricane struck in Haiti, which is a country already experiencing too much of a nightmare, most of it political. And hundreds of thousands of Haitians in the city of Gonaïves alone have been left homeless by Tropical Storm Jean, and homes, schools, and health centers have been damaged or destroyed. A fundraising concert will be held on October 23, 2004, to come to the assistance of the people of Gonaïves. We ask you to come out to Bar 918, located at 918 St. Clair Avenue West at Oakwood, and you'll experience an evening of music, dance, and songs. Talented Haitian artists, including Jean-Sébastien Duperval, Alain Lanou, and George Nazi, and Josu Fortune. There is a special band of father and son, I believe. Kabzi is a dynamic group which has been evolving since 1989 on the Montreal and North American artistic scene. The group plays mainly new generation compa, popular Haitian music, and they also do some rock and roll, hip-hop, and country music. And it is, however, it's a real attachment is with Franco-Canadian culture. And so, again, that's October 23rd, 918 St. Clair Avenue West at Oakwood. This is a benefit for the Haitian flood and storm victims. If you need more information, call 416-554-4598. That's Stanley Lillivoire would be the person to reach there. You can also write to email unleashed. You know something? I'm not going to be able to read that, so I'm going to give you the number again, 416-554-4598, to help the Haitians. And today we have a very special program. We're going to be talking about a campaign against one of the biggest, toughest, meanest, powerful outfits around the world. Its name is known everywhere. Some people associate its name almost with the USA. It's called Coca-Cola, and there is a campaign it's called the Killer Coke Campaign, and it has come to Canada in the person of Ray Rogers, who is from the U.S. and is one of the leaders of that campaign. I'm going to just read you a portion of the sort of summary of the material that we're going to be taking up today. In 2001, a lawsuit was filed against Coca-Cola by the International Labor Rights Fund and the United Steelworkers of America on behalf of Sinaltranol, the Colombian union representing coke workers, several of its members, and the estate of Isidro Gil, one of the murdered officers. The lawsuit charges that Coca-Cola's bottlers in Colombia contracted with or otherwise directed paramilitary security forces that utilized extreme violence and murdered, tortured, unlawfully detained, or otherwise silenced trade union leaders. It was later decided that a highly visible public campaign would be needed to supplement the legal strategy. That is where the corporate campaign Inc. came in and launched the worldwide campaign to stop Killer Coke. By the way, there's a web address, www.killercoke.org. I assume you can spell Killer Coke. After conducting months of research, CCI, and that's www.corporatecampaign.org, came up with a strategic plan to undermine Coca-Cola's image and to cut off their markets and to pressure the companies, top policymakers, institutional investors, and creditors. This strategy seeks to divide the power brokers against each other. By the way, that's laying it out there. They can study that. As Rogers says, it's about confronting power with power. We must raise the stakes high enough so that Coke and its financial allies realize that it's going to cost them a lot more than they have to gain if they don't clean up their act in Colombia. There's going to be, by the way, Roger's going to be speaking. I'm reading, getting this from an item. This is Saturday, October 23rd, 7 p.m., Campaign to Stop Killer Coke, and that's going to be at the Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. That's south of College Street and east of Spinana Avenue. The keynote speaker is Ray Rogers. The other guest speakers will include Dan Kovalik, Assistant General Counsel, the United Steelworkers of America, co-counsel in the lawsuit against Coca-Cola, and Overrico, Sinal Treno, he is from the National Colombian Food Workers Union, and there's going to be salsa music that night, and the tickets are $10 at the door, and we urge everybody to go. That's going to be October 23rd. By the way, we have other dates we'll be announcing here. Matter of fact, well, heck, I'll do it now. Wednesday, October 21st, at McMaster University, it's going to be Columbia Night Discussion, McMaster U Student Center, and that's in Hamilton, and Ray Rogers is the speaker, and Professor George Sorger is reporting on his recent visit to Colombia as part of the caravan to protect the lives of Colombian trade unionists. And there's going to be a video shown at that event, produced by Sinal Treno. I assume later somebody's going to help me with my pronunciation. I hope they got it right. The Colombian union that includes the workers of Coca-Cola, about their struggle to survive as a union and as individuals. That's going to be Wednesday, October 21st. And continuing with the dates that you should know about, there will be a rally and demonstration at the Royal Bank of Canada Tuesday, October 19th, 4:30 p.m. Ray Rogers will be there. Campaign to Stop Killer Coke. That's the Royal Bank of Canada, 200 Bay Street. And that's 4:30. And later today, after this program, at 6:30, at the AMNI Center, 246 Bloor Street West, the first floor, wheelchair accessible space, a discussion to raise awareness around the gruesome cycle of murders, kidnappings, and torture of Sinal Treno, National Colombian Food Workers Union leaders and organizers involved in daily life and death struggles at Coca-Cola bottling plants in Colombia. The objective is to mobilize students in order to force the University of Toronto to divest money from Coke and terminate all present and future contracts. For information on that, you call OPIRG, that's the organization, and the number is 416-978-7770. Again, 416-978-7770. That's today that Ray Rogers will be speaking at 246 Bloor Street West at a place called the AMNI Center. Having done all that, Ray Rogers is actually right here enduring all this. And Ray, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Phil. It's great to be here. And you just did a terrific rundown.
Yeah, you got to listen. You're a busy man. This is a lot of work. So you have a lawsuit. The United Steelworkers of America seems to be involved in that. The people in this struggle feel it needs this other component. And when did you decide that, and what is this campaign going to, sort of, what's your strategy, and give us an outline?
Well, there's no question that justice delayed is justice denied. In the court system, you certainly want to bring horrible things like this to the attention of the court system. The way that this was done, the lawsuit originally was that under what's called the Alien Tort Claims Act in the United States, it allows foreigners to sue in U.S. and United States courts around issues of horrific things done to humanity. The Sinal Treno, there was such a problem down here in Colombia, they finally turned to the United Steelworkers and to the International Labor Rights Fund that filed the lawsuit. We realize that the courts are a very slow process. Coca-Cola certainly doesn't want to see this case go to court, and what they've done is they've tried to do everything they can to slow the process down. So we're developing a campaign basically to light a fire under Coke, under its board members, under its stockholders, under its creditors, to do the right thing.
Yeah. I guess you assume, like maybe the rest of us, the world doesn't tend to hear about these things, right? I mean, we get a lot of grim news from places like South America, and we hear people being killed kind of regularly. And so if Coca-Cola is involved or other corporations, it's unless somebody does something right here, it tends to be just sort of stacked, put in a warehouse somewhere, put on a shelf, and and ignored, right?
Right.
It's the individual himself. I understand it. I see there's a name involved. It's the estate of Isidro Gil. They're the ones who walked into court in the U.S. and said, we want this.
Well, actually, the lawsuit was filed on behalf of Sinaltinal, several of its members, and the estate of survivors of Isidro Gil.
Mm-hmm. What makes the target here? We know that there's a lot of political violence in Colombia. It really has a terrible reputation. I was reading the New York Times about it the other day. They tend to put it into three ways. They say there's the government forces, there's some kind of guerrilla struggle, and then there's the third group of people that they claim are independent, who seem to be the ones doing some of this murdering of union people, for example.
Well, I'll kind of give a quick overview. The situation is that the Uribe government, the big multinationals like Coca-Cola and the paramilitaries, all have one thing in common. They don't want any social movement, and particularly a strong labor movement, that could challenge either their authority or their brutality. So they're working together. The paramilitaries are doing the work of companies like Coca-Cola. And we have plenty of proof that shows that Coca-Cola managers have collaborated and work with the paramilitaries to crush the union there in Colombia.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking to Ray Rogers, he's the director of the campaign to stop Killer Coke, and he's going to be speaking throughout the area, and I'll return to give those addresses again as we go along. I just remind you, he will be about an hour and a half from now at 246 Bloor Street West, kind of a strategy session. I hope everybody will join him. What is it? I see casualty figures as like looking at soldiers. If you're a trade unionist down there, I mean, they take a lot of losses.
Yes.
How dangerous is it? And is Coca-Cola sort of do they stand out as an employer that involved with paramilitaries and that kind of thing, or is this just a pattern?
Well, there are a number of large corporations, including Drummond Coal Company and Occidental Petroleum, some of the big companies that are involved in the same type of thing that Coca-Cola is. Again, it's going to take an awful lot of public pressure to force these companies to stop essentially taking advantage of a very tragic situation in Colombia. You know, it's union busting is one thing, but when you are complicit in murder, torture, and kidnapping, things like that, it's another whole issue. The Coca-Cola company, of course, spends an awful lot of money, billions of dollars, to create a reality that really has nothing to do with what the reality behind this company is. The Coca-Cola company is rife with immorality, with corruption, and gross human rights and environmental abuses. That's the reality behind this company.
Yeah. By the way, do you, with them, I can remember when Coca-Cola got in trouble in the city of Chicago in the MOVE campaign. I know Jesse Jackson struggled with them. And at the time, he said, you know, we're not against you guys doing business. We want you to do business, no problem. But if we suggest that you fight, you know, you do something about discrimination in your hiring practices, the way you treat workers and all that, and then things will look good for you.
Well, I'll tell you.
Or they might improve. Your image would improve.
Yeah. Actually, Reverend Jackson was at their annual stockholders meeting just last April in Wilmington, Delaware, a meeting at which I raised many serious issues, not only the Colombian issue, but environmental issues, issues of fraud within the company. And I was seriously assaulted by Coke security at the annual meeting. Reverend Jackson was in the meeting, and he got up and said, if that person was hurt, you're going to be facing another major lawsuit. You used force that was completely unnecessary to try to stifle what this person was saying. Reverend Jackson, yes, some time ago was raising issues about the racism that's prevalent throughout the Coca-Cola system. Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola, a few years back, paid almost $200 million to settle a class action discrimination lawsuit. Mm-hmm. There are many other discrimination lawsuits against Coca-Cola right now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a company which discrimination continues to persist. It's a company that, unfortunately, with those people who try to protect the integrity of the company, the whistleblowers, they scorn and fire.
Yeah. So that's encouraging, by the way, what you described, Jesse Jackson speaking up, when you were the one who, in that case, was almost hurt.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Reverend Jackson was there to speak around an issue that was also directly related to our campaign. The Washington Post reported in April that the general counsel, secretary, and executive vice president of the Coca-Cola company, a guy by the name of Deval Patrick, One of the main reasons was given for his resignation being announced on Easter Sunday was our campaign. And what had happened was DeVal Patrick was getting an award called the Equal Justice Award from a group of attorneys at a big event in Washington, D.C. We handed out our literature to everybody going into the event. Some of the attorneys stood up and raised the Colombian issue to DeVal Patrick. And he felt it necessary to say that Coca-Cola will support an independent investigation and we will allow a number of you attorneys to be a part of that investigation. Well, as the Washington Post reported, the chief executive of Coca-Cola, Douglas Staff, after giving the okay, said, no, we're not going to allow such an investigation to take place. And that was the last straw, and DeVal Patrick resigned. I might add that Douglas Staff, the chief executive, was the chair of the annual meeting when I was assaulted, handled things very, very badly, and is heard on the microphone and was quoted in the press as saying, we've made a mistake, security, stand down, stand down. He was forced. They're trying to put a nice picture on it, but believe me, he had to step down quickly himself on January the 1st, the chief executive officer, and he lost himself, I understand, some millions of dollars in his restricted stock awards. And then the president and chief financial officer, president and chief operating officer also resigned. So Coca-Cola lost three of its top officials just over the past several months.
It sounds like you guys know what you're doing.
I might add, one of the board of directors said for health reasons she was resigning. She was at one of the big universities, and we have a lot happening at colleges and universities throughout the United States, happening up here in Canada and around the world. And right now we have eight colleges and universities, five in the United States and three in Ireland, that have banned or removed Coke products from the campuses over the Colombian issue.
Over this issue?
Oh, yes. In fact, at Carleton College in Minnesota, a college of just 2,000 in the United States, Coca-Cola sent five representatives to try to talk the student government out of terminating the contract. I was at that meeting. We went head-to-head. After the meeting, the students decided to terminate the contract, and 42 Coke machines were removed from Carleton College campus.
You know, there's something to be said for democracy, right?
You know, we got a great bunch of students out in Ireland. They helped kick a lot of things off when they held a referendum last October. And the referendum was to ban all Coke products from student-owned and operated facilities on the largest university in Ireland. It passed. Coca-Cola found out that if they could get another student group within 60 days to challenge, they could force another referendum, which they did. I might add that more students turned out. It backfired on Coke. More students turned out and voted at a much higher percentage to ban Coca-Cola from the campus. Then the oldest college in Ireland followed suit, Trinity College, and then a third college did the same thing.
That's the kind of, like this meeting you'll be having today, you're going to be talking about building campaigns similar to the one in Ireland, right?
Exactly. What we're doing is we're working with college and university students all across around the world to try to prevent their campuses from signing these exclusive contracts or captive audience contracts with companies like Coca-Cola. And essentially what we're saying is that no campus that prides itself as a center of ethics and morality should be lending its name and credibility to Coca-Cola and serve as a marketplace or venue for its advertising. It can be a personal decision if somebody wants to boycott Coke. But at the same time, again, our public institutions or our government agencies, our colleges and universities, our labor unions, anybody concerned about morality and ethics should not, again, be serving as a marketplace or venue for this company's advertising. I can tell you that colleges and universities in the United States, some of the biggest campuses that have Coke contracts, written in the contracts is something like this. When the pom-pom kids are out cheering for the basketball team and the football teams, it'll go something like this. Always Coke, always Rutgers. Always Rutgers, always Coke.
Really?
Now,
oh my!
You know,
there must be good money in that.
It's good money, but it's very sad.
I mean, in other words, they're giving a ton to the, and of course that's why, you know, someone like yourself comes to a campus and the president of the university wants to talk to whoever invited you, and they explain to them, you realize that how much money is riding on this. You know, we'd like to have that nice new building that, you remember the one we were planning?
Exactly.
We could lose that.
You know, and I just happened to mention Rutgers for an example. That's a campus of 51,000 students.
Very distinguished.
The only product the only beverage you can buy on that campus, the three campuses throughout New Jersey, are Coca-Cola products, unless you say buy milk or coffee, all right? Mm-hmm. And that includes not only all the Coke products, but it includes Powerade, their sports drink, it includes Nest Tea, their tea, it includes Minute Maid, their orange juice. Now, we had a strong campaign going on there, and they had a 10-year contract. The university got $1 million a year. Coca-Cola got a lot more. We had such a strong campaign that the leaders of the university, the administration, said, look, we can't just throw Coke off right now. We need to look for alternatives. We need a year. Yeah. They only renewed the contract until this coming May. They have 600 Coca-Cola machines and hundreds of miles of Coca-Cola pipeline, so to speak. And right now, we think we have a very good, strong chance of forcing Coke off that campus.
And closing the pipeline.
Closing the pipeline, yes,
yes.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a nice echo here because in terms of a boycott, I'm one of the first things I was ever involved in here was a local, somewhat celebrated Toronto lawyer and mass prophet, University of Toronto, Peter Rosenthal, and I. We were campaigning for the removal of Dow Chemical because of the napalm. Now I'm looking at Coca-Cola and I find Dow. Explain that to me.
Well, that's one of the main reasons.
Deja vu all over again.
That's one of the main reasons I'm going across to Canada right now. One of the top policymakers of Coca-Cola, J. Pedro Reinhart, is also a chief policymaker of Dow Chemical, which owns Union Carbide. He is the chief financial officer and a director of Dow Chemical. He is also on the board as a top policymaker of the Royal Bank of Canada. Now, as you were just talking about campaigns going against Dow Chemical because of the making of napalm and their subsidiary, Union Carbide, in 1984, and I say to the listening audience, I'm going back to 1984, but we're going to bring it right up to present here. In 1984, there was a deadly gas leak at one of their Union Carbide plant, Dow Chemical plants now, in Bhopal, India. 8,000 people died from that. 20,000 people have died as a result of their exposure, and an estimated 150,000 are suffering from adverse effects from what happened in 84. To this day, there are 10,000 local community members that are still suffering because that site has not been cleaned up. Now, we have J. Pedro Reinhart involved as a top policymaker of Coca-Cola, involved in a complicity in murder and torture of union workers in Colombia. Hmm. We have him where he's been at Dow Chemical, which owns Union Carbide. He's been at Dow Chemical for almost four decades with the horrible things that are happening there. Does this sound like your friendly banker? So what we're doing here is we're asking people to protest the World Bank of Canada. Either you tell J. Pedro Reinhart to clean up the act at Coca-Cola and, frankly, Dow Chemical, or get off our board.
Yeah.
Either dump Reinhart or we'll dump you. That's the message we want to go to the Royal Bank of Canada.
Yeah. That was emphatic. And here's how you can do it. Tuesday, that's October 19th, there's going to be a rally, demonstration at Royal Bank, and Ray Rogers is going to be there, by the way, so you can come and say, and salute, say, okay, you called, now I'm coming. That's going to be at the Royal Bank of Canada, 200 Bay Street, Bay in front, at 4:30 p.m. It is... this thing of one guy being on a bank, and then he's with Dow, and then he's with Coke. And very often, by the way, they're also sitting on university boards. I don't know if we have any Coke people around, but they tend to know each other, these folks. That's what I've noticed. What about I guess I want to know this, to go back to the original action. Could you tell us a little bit about what's it like to be a trade unionist, a Coke employee in Colombia? What are these people facing, and what happened to this individual, if you can?
One of the main parts of the lawsuit focuses on the murder of Isidro Gil in December of 1996. Paramilitaries walked to the Coke plant and shot Isidro standing in the doorway of the Coke plant. That same night, the union office was set ablaze. The next day, paramilitary security forces marched in to the Coca-Cola plant, rounded up all the workers in the plant, and told them that if they did not resign from the union by 4 p.m. that day, they too would be murdered. Either leave town, resign from the union, or you'll face death.
I have to ask you, but right there, did Coca-Cola management object to these third parties coming in and harassing their workers?
Well, not at all. In fact, apparently they invited them in because Coca-Cola management, had prepared resignation form so that all the workers could sign the resignation form. So they're actually collaborating and working with the paramilitaries. And we have a lot of documentation and witnesses of how the plant management at Coca-Cola bottling plants in Colombia collaborate with the paramilitaries, how they give the paramilitaries free Coca-Cola, how they allow paramilitaries to come into the plants freely, how the paramilitaries come into the plants and write graffiti on the walls threatening the workers.
You have statements and evidence you've brought.
Yes. This is all part of the lawsuit. And people can go to laborrights.org. They can read the entire text of the lawsuit. That's laborrights.org.
I have to ask you, we're in Canada. Is that with a U or an O-R?
Oh, that's just with an O-R. Yeah.
Okay.
Just labor, L-A-B-O-R, rights.org. They can also
go... So you guys in Buffalo, remember, it's just O-R. Yeah.
Right. They can also go to killercoke.org, which is our website, killercoke.org.
And they can find this story.
And they can find these stories, yes. And I should also add that the workers, of course, sign these resignation forms en masse. And what was the incentive here for the company? The workers left. The wages in the plant were $380 a month, and when the new hirees were brought in, they were paid $130 a month. So there's a huge economic incentive by the company to destroy the union. And the violence, and the, we have a city council member in New York who's also a former police officer. He asked the Coca-Cola company to participate in an independent delegation to send it to Colombia to do an independent investigation to check on the allegations against the company. Coca-Cola refused. So the council member put together his own delegation. They issued a scathing report in April, the conclusion of which was that the Coca-Cola company, headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, is complicit in gross human rights violations against its workers in Colombia. They also went on to say when they came back, the delegation member said, "We heard one story after another of torture and injustice. The sheer number of these testimonials was overwhelming. And the Coca-Cola's complicity is deepened by its repeated pattern of bringing criminal charges against union activists who have spoken out about the company's collusion with paramilitaries." I should also add that just recently, as Javier Correa, the president of the Sinaloa-Tornal Union, as he has said many times, if they can't get union leaders, they start going after their family members. The workers went on a 12-day hunger strike in March. One of the hunger strike's leaders, his three members of his family, including a young child, were murdered in April.
Pretty grim place.
Pretty grim place.
When you say hunger strike, would they have done that? Did they gather somewhere, like at a church or at the workplace?
How did they do that? They actually sat out in front of the workplaces, and they did kind of a rolling hunger strike where it's very dangerous what they were doing. Many people were participating in it. And like I say, the paramilitaries down there that work closely with the Coca-Cola company did not find this a tactic that they particularly appreciated.
Yeah, I'll bet. Listening to the Taylor Report, we're talking to Ray Rogers of the Campaign to Stop Killer Coke, and we're going to take a brief break, and we'll come back. You're listening to CIUT at 9.5 FM. And that's the voice of Woody Guthrie, and he is appropriate man to be backing up our program today because we're talking to Ray Rogers of the Campaign to Stop Killer Coke. And Ray Rogers, as soon as this program is over, he's a busy fella. He's going to, about 30 minutes later, you can come and meet him at 246 Bloor Street West, to first floor. It's the AMNI Center. It's wheelchair accessible. It's going to be one of those strategy meetings. And if you want to know more about those who are organizing this particular meeting at 6:30 at 246 Bloor West, you can call 416-978-7770. And I want to remind you that on Tuesday, tomorrow, October 19th, 4:30 p.m., Ray Rogers and others will be of the Campaign to Stop Killer Coke are going to be at the Royal Bank of Canada. Take their issues to the bank. Start with the banks. That's always a good idea. 200 Bay Street and Bay in front. Then there's going to be a meeting Wednesday, October 21st, at McMaster University, Columbia Night Discussion. And it's McMaster University Student Center. The time, again, is 7:30. The speakers are going to be Ray Rogers of the campaign and Professor George Sorger, who sounds like he really has an important eyewitness account to render. He's telling about his recent visit to Colombia as part of the caravan to protect the lives of Colombian trade unionists. And we've been hearing from Ray Rogers, those lives need protecting. There's going to be a video that night. It's produced by Sinal Trano, the Colombian union that includes the workers of Coca-Cola, about their struggle to survive as a union and as individuals. By the way, you can contact the promoters of this meeting, Sorger, S-O-R-G-E-R, at McMaster.ca. And on Saturday, October 23rd, campaign to stop Killer Coke, there's going to be a fundraiser and mobilization meeting, and that's going to be at the Steelworkers Hall. How nice to hear that the unions are involved with this, and that they're building at 25 Cecil Street. That's College Street and east. That's at College and south of College, east of Spadina. That'll be Saturday at 7 p.m. I would recommend that you go to all these. Just make sure you're up to date and helping out. And again, Ray Rogers is right here with us. And Ray, you've already started talking to some students. Who you been talking to, and what's the reaction?
Well, the reaction was overwhelmingly positive, very supportive. This morning I spoke at the student school, which had already banned Coca-Cola from their campus. Very enlightened students there over this Colombian issue.
They're ahead of
you. Yeah, they're ahead of us, all right. In fact,
Maybe they're fighting sugar or something. I mean, the students here are really worried about junk food in their schools.
Right. Well, in the case of these students, they were aware of the Colombian issue, and they had passed a resolution just on the Colombian issue, and that they wanted to ban Coca-Cola from their campus. And we actually have their resolution on our website even right now at www.killercoke.org. And it was wonderful to see those students and to thank them and to respond to the many very enlightened questions that they had. Then there was over 100 students there at the student school. Then we went to Oakwood Collegiate Institute, and I expected, you know, not a large crowd, but there were 400 students there. The principals were there, the teachers were there. Angie Romo with the teachers union, who helped really pull this all together, along with Larry Wells, the work that he's been doing from the Oakville and District Labor Council. To see these students just sit there, and then the questions, we could have literally stayed an extra hour just to respond to the many questions that the students were asking. They were very concerned. I expect that there may be a number of them out there supporting the demonstration if they're free tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 p.m. to be out in front of the Royal Bank of Canada. And like I say, you know, what's important about these schools is that Coke sees the youth market, of course, as one of their major, major markets. In fact, we were handing out literature to all the students, faculty, and staff, and one of the things we quoted in there was that Coke wants to make all schools, colleges, and universities captive markets. And a Coke representative said this: students will continue to drink Coca-Cola products for 50 to 60 years. That's why
and then
the
they
student
die.
Market. And then they die. If they their teeth are rotten,
and
their insides are
and what, they,
hurting.
They pour Coke on the coffin, I think. It's kind of an old ceremony.
Exactly. And, it's an important market. And Coca-Cola was so scared about my even being at this school presenting the reality that is what Coke is all about rather than a false reality that they try to create with their hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising, that they, from what I understand, they contacted the Board of Education. The Board of Education then called, I guess, the principals and the administrators at the campuses, at the schools. And while I was at these schools, there was information that Coca-Cola had faxed over to them to be handed out to all the students, basically doing the same old claims that they make, that we are totally innocent and we respect human rights and all that malarkey. Yet I can tell you right now, Coca-Cola will not go head-to-head with me or any other representatives of this campaign or the lawsuit, they would not sit here with me and go head-to-head while you pose questions about what the truth is.
Yeah, they don't believe in a fair fight, right?
Right.
It's tough to get... You know, by the way, thank you for that telling that story, because, frankly, we are kind of proud. We have a pretty healthy, I'd say, political culture. And you mentioned the union was there, the teachers' union.
Oh, yes.
Wherever you find unions, you find a degree of civility and awareness. I'm not surprised. I think it'll be a little, it's tough to find a venue almost as this around North America. There are some, but it's tough to find this kind of venue for this issue. Listening to you, by the way, I think maybe somebody ought to think about a film, maybe like Super Size Me. Maybe you guys ought to do a Coke This or a Coke Off or something.
Not a bad idea.
Because those students are certainly, they have a lot to worry about. I mean, their diets, they really do.
Well,
and particularly when they're dealing with monopolies. I mean, you mentioned, like Rutgers, here's this great institution, and it says you can only have Coke. It's like, we think of ourselves as a free society, but I walk into a restaurant and I say, I'll have a burger, fries, and a Pepsi, and a guy says Coke. And I say, oh yeah, right, my mistake, Coke. Or I go to the other guy's place and I say Coke, and he says Pepsi, and I agree with him.
Right.
Instead of saying, hey, wait a minute, I thought it was, can I order what I want?
Let me tell you one of the great scams being put on the public right now by the Coca-Cola company is their so-called purified water, Dasani water. Now, Dasani water is nothing more than tap water that goes through a purification process that Coke then goes sells at a premium price. In England, not too long ago, just a few months back, they had to pull 500,000 bottles of Dasani off the market. Why? Well, because through their osmosis, their purification process, it just ended up that the water was found to have toxic chemicals in it, cancer-producing agents. Mm-hmm. So they had to remove 500,000 bottles from the shelves. The other funny thing was that this is in Great Britain. What also came out in Great Britain was that the Dasani water is nothing more than tap water. Now, if you would just go to the tap, you could have gotten a more pure water.
And give it your own name.
Give it your own name. And you were paying 3,000 times more for the Dasani water than if you had just gone in and filled up a bottle from the tap.
Yeah. I didn't really think I'd reach this point in my life. I remember when I was a fairly young guy and a cynical leftist told me, he said, someday they're going to be charging you to drink water. And I said, ho, 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 you know.
Well, you know, there's a real issue here, and there's a Polaris Institute here in Canada that's pretty well known, and they're very concerned about Coke. They're very concerned about the kind of control that Coke is trying to take over water supplies. But, you know, there's another whole issue with Coca-Cola and water, and that's what's happening in places like India, Ghana, and Mexico, where they are literally stealing and destroying the water supplies of entire villages and turning a farmland into wasteland. Yes. You've got thousands of people demonstrating in India right now against Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Well, by the way, fear of water certainly drives people to the soft drink industry. I mean, I do some work in Tanzania, and there people will order. They're afraid to drink the water. You know, if they go in restaurants or whatnot, they always ask for soft drink because they think if they get the water, it'll harm them.
I'm glad you brought that point up, because what Coke is trying to do, and there have been statements made by their officials over the years, is that they claim now, I think, that more people drink soft drink beverages than they do water, but they would like to literally see Coca-Cola become, they would rather see Coca-Cola. They want the Coca-Cola product, people consuming much more of that than water, I'm presuming, unless you buy Dasani water. And you know, for health reasons, like I say, this is a company that has aggressively marketed nutritionally worthless and damaging products to the youth, not only throughout Canada, throughout America, throughout the world, and yet they've made billions and billions of dollars doing this.
Yeah.
And it's pretty disgusting.
And they say that they can't afford to let Colombian workers have a union and have a decent life, but they have this profit to go through the ceiling.
That's right.
It is incredible. How about organized labor in North America? What role? We know the steel workers are playing a role. I think the Canadian auto workers. How about the UAW in the States and AFL-CIO and people like that?
Well, I think the unions are really in North America are really beginning to wake up and really get on board this in an even bigger way. We've had some wonderful developments recently. You mentioned the United Auto Workers. In December, I was speaking at the Local 22, the biggest United Auto Workers local in General Motors. After my speech there, they just took the Coke machine and got it out of there. All the union officers and members that were in the at the rally in the meeting were dumping Coke, you know, into barrels. So they banned Coke products from the union halls and all their functions, and they said, we'll take care of those Coke machines over at GM. But what's happening just recently, the past couple of months at the national conventions, say, of the biggest AFL-CIO union, the Service Employees International Union, they passed a resolution to boycott all Coke products, to ban them from all the premises, and to help organize as much support for the Killer Coke campaign throughout labor, throughout the country. Just a few weeks ago, the Communications Workers of America and the American Postal Workers Union both passed resolutions. Both passed resolutions whereby they're going to give a warning to Coke's number one financial ally, SunTrust Banks, that if the lawsuit isn't resolved and the safety and the safety and rights of the workers aren't protected, that they will support a divestment and boycott campaign of SunTrust Banks. Now, this is interesting because the Communications Workers of America and the American Postal Workers Union both have many tens of millions of dollars in the bank. Many of their locals have money in the bank, and many of their members. We have several other organizations, U.S. Labor Against the War, that represents 85 unions. We have one of the major free speech commercial radio stations and other groups and other unions that are also coming on board this campaign. I am now communicating in dialogue with three other big unions, one of which I understand to have hundreds of millions of dollars in SunTrust, to get on board this same thing. Now, what we're talking about is how labor can begin to use the economic clout. One of the things that unions have done is money is power, and they've been turning that money power over to these big bankers that do
They're not asking any questions, right?
To undermine the labor movement.
Yeah.
They use that money power to smash unions over the head, right? So even here in Canada, if the labor unions want to, you know, really come on board this bank thing with Royal Bank of Canada, they can start raising some very serious issues. They can start sending these petitions. Well, they can start calling for meetings with the head of the Royal Bank and say, either you get that J. Peter Reinhardt off the board, otherwise dump Reinhardt or we'll dump you. It'll be a very powerful statement.
Yeah. And by the way, they did that in South Africa, on the South African issue. I think that's one of the first places they woke up to how much of power they potentially had.
Exactly.
They said, well, we'll take our money and put it somewhere else. And they got somebody's attention.
Let me bring up another situation, because, you know, a very important market is the Latino market to Coca-Cola, particularly when they're trying to get away with the kind of things that they're trying to do in Latin America and make it seem like they're really doing good things for Latinos. The Labor Coalition for Latin American Advancement is a constituency group of the American Federation of Labor, the AFL-CIO, in the United States. They represent the interests of 1.7 million Latino workers throughout the United States and Puerto Rico. They were holding their national convention in August. Lo and behold, who's co-sponsoring their convention? Coca-Cola. Some delegates that were aware of our campaign got outraged, contact me at my office. We ship down all kinds of materials. We send down a communique. They then put a motion on the floor, which passed overwhelmingly, to send the $10,000 co-sponsorship money back to Coca-Cola and to call on the AFL-CIO to do their own independent investigation and send LACLA representatives to Colombia. The person who helped bring that co-sponsorship together was a man by the name of Jack Otero. He actually, not too many years ago, was on the executive board of the AFL-CIO. At the same time that he was hired by Coca-Cola just a couple of months ago to try to do damage control with the labor unions. So he put that co-sponsorship together, and he got a big black eye before he was left. At that same meeting, there was a debate on the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which the unions are totally opposed to. Jack Otero was speaking on behalf of the Central American Free Trade Agreement. This is a man who uses his labor credentials to do everything he can to undermine the interests of labor and to try to undermine this Coca-Cola campaign.
There's good money in being a rat, you know. There's a lot of people who figure, you know, well, gee, I just walk across the other side, right?
Phil, I like your description. But you know what?
You didn't say that. I said that.
The only problem is
he'll come looking for me.
You're being kind of mean to rats. I hope this guy's a lot worse.
Let's hope. Yeah, he has a shorter lifespan. Rat's been around forever, but he probably won't be. As a matter of fact, it sounds like you knocked him out, right? People are on to him.
Well, let's say that when Koch has to go to that type of person to represent their interests in the labor movement, because they did go in to meet with department heads within the AFL-CIO, and they were told very clearly, you have a serious problem, and it's not a public relations problem. It's a labor and human rights problem, and you'd better deal with it. And Coca-Cola is scared to death of the labor movement. That's why it's so important what people like Larry Wells at the Oakville District Labor Council and the people over at that labor council, the leadership and the members are doing, and what Angie Romo with the teachers union and the postal, I know the postal union here in Canada, a number of people local that are involved. Coke is scared to death of union involvement. Why? Because they do have a lot of clout. When they decide to take on an issue, they can really have a great impact. And Coca-Cola knows that there's a lot of union halls with Coca-Cola machines, a lot of union members and their families drink Coca-Cola. There's a lot of union money in the banks that they're tied into, and they're scared to death that labor's really going to get on board. Right now, I believe they are. I should also add that in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, the largest union in Great Britain also passed a resolution just recently to boycott all Coke products.
You know, that's... I must say, I'm impressed with it has to be having some kind of impact. Obviously, Coke is certain signs of perspiration. I mean, like you spoke today, and they come and make sure there's a leaflet. But aren't they beginning to kind of adjust? I mean, what's it like? Are they altering their profile, for example, in Colombia? Are those workers, is there any ripple yet from this activity that they can feel that maybe they're a little safer because of your work?
Well, on one hand, yes, I think that they do feel a little bit safer. On the other hand, what is happening is that the paramilitaries are still allowed to roam freely. They are allowed to put graffiti on the walls to threaten and intimidate the workers and the walls of the plants. And these are the kind of things that are going on. I should add that Fortune magazine, well-known big business publication, wrote a story in June, and they said that the Colombian issue is the worst public relations nightmare that the Coca-Cola company has. Now, the Coca-Cola company just put out results that showed that they're having some serious problems in North America, particularly. Well, and in Europe, and these are areas that we're, you know, campuses are severing, cutting contracts, labor unions are removing Coke machines. There's no question that our campaign is having a real impact. I think right now we're causing Coke some not only millions, but even tens of millions of dollars. And I believe if we're able to cut them out of some major contracts and we're able to have success on the Royal Bank of Canada and SunTrust, that we're going to raise the stakes much higher for this company. And the only thing that this company will respond to is that they have to know that they have a lot more to lose than to gain if they don't clean up their act in Colombia.
Yeah, and by the way, it's clear that another broader impact, for example, Fortune ends up talking about this issue. It's beyond just those workers for Coca-Cola. It says if you're going to be a big corporate citizen there and you're going to be throwing your weight around, that's a society that's run by a small collection of rats, to go back to my metaphor, that they should be concerned about the society in which they're extracting all these profits, right? They actually have to say, for example, you described that ugly incident where they actually came into the plant and drove the workers out, forced them to sign resignation, all that stuff. And Coca-Cola didn't say, gee, stop. But they have to be, they can't just say, that wasn't me. They have to say, stop.
Well,
and then say it to the government and say it to the paramilitaries.
Well, exactly. You know, I don't know if I had mentioned that, since 1989 through 2002, seven Coca-Cola union leaders, seven leaders of Sinaltrano, the union that represents these Coca-Cola workers, have been murdered, and one friendly plant manager, and many other have been intimidated and tortured, and all kinds of awful things have taken place. We think that Coca-Cola would want to clean up its act, and one of the things they have to do, there are a series of things, there are basically seven things that Coca-Cola has to do to resolve this situation. And one of the things is something you just mentioned. They have to come out publicly and disassociate themselves from this violence. And they have to also stop their managers from pointing the finger at Coca-Cola union leaders and saying they're part of the guerrilla forces, okay?
Yes.
I mean, they also, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, if Coca-Cola, if these Colombian bottlers were making a mistake in terms of producing Coca-Cola down and mixing the syrup in the water, if they were making a mistake distributing Coca-Cola throughout the country and making profits for the company, Coca-Cola would be down there overnight. But absolutely, when it comes to killing union leaders, they don't say a word. Yeah. And that's the problem here. They think that this is nothing but a public relations problem when it's a serious labor and human rights problem that they have to address.
Yeah.
And we're going to make them address it.
Yeah, it's not a question of, never mind who they are, who are you, right? Coke has to declare who it is.
That's right. And by the way, Coca-Cola would like to suggest that they don't have control over these bottling plants. In fact, they have complete control. They are the majority owners in these bottling plants. They have their own top officials, both at the board level and chief officers who sit on the boards of the biggest Colombian bottler. And these bottlers exist primarily to produce and distribute Coca-Cola products. So if Coca-Cola simply called down and says, you'll get no more of our syrup, you'll no longer be able to drive our trucks, you can't have our Coca-Cola signs over your building. On the one hand, Coca-Cola says we have no control. On the other hand, they take the profits and they call all the shots.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it comes back to their door. They're behind this. They have to, and they can decide how it goes. We're speaking to Ray Rogers of the Campaign to Stop Killer Coke. By the way, right after this program, he's probably not even going to get time to for a meal. At 6:30, he's going to be at 246 Bloor Street West. I think it's called a strategy session. That's wheelchair accessible at the AMNI Center. Tuesday at 4:30, there's going to be a rally and demonstration at the Royal Bank of Canada. Ray Rogers will be there. Ray, I got a... It occurred to me as I'm listening, what about... Atlanta is the Coke capital of America, isn't it?
That is Coke capital. They call it the world of Coke.
Are there any union folks there? And what about the Coke workers? I don't even know if they're organized. Can you tell us anything about that? Do you know what they think of all this?
There are a number of Coca-Cola workers organized. The Teamsters, the biggest union in the United States, has Coca-Cola workers. And the Canadian auto workers here in Canada have, I think, a few thousand Coca-Cola workers organized. You will not hear me, although I support groups that decide to boycott Coke, I do not use the word boycott because it's a sensitive issue with union leaders to be able to suggest to boycott Coca-Cola when we're organizing workers at Coke plants and we represent Coke workers. On the other hand, they understand when I say that we are cutting off Coke markets, that no union or college or university should lend their credibility in their name to a company that has this terrible labor and human rights record.
Would actually kill a fellow worker who was somebody trying to organize a union.
Right. And, you know, so in the unions, like, but the unions have no problem with boycotting, using the word, even the unions that represent Coke workers, with using the word boycott the banks. Mm-hmm. There are no union workers at these banks. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, I might say that the Teamsters that represent the most Coke workers in the United States, they're at the annual meeting. They happen to be demonstrating themselves because they had their union in Philadelphia, not far from where the annual meeting was being held. They were on strike, and they were calling for a boycott of Coke. And I got some of them into the meeting, and we joined forces.
You got their attention.
Yeah, but they've also been very supportive of what we've been doing as well. And we expect a lot more support from them going after the banking institutions because they also have lots of resources in these banks.
And we're coming close to the end. The AFL-CIO has been going through kind of a change. It has 10 years ago, it was a fairly difficult group to bring these kind of issues to, but they have developed an activist reputation. Do you find that the climate better when dealing with the executive AFL-CIO than it used to be in dealing taking up a matter like this?
Well, I think that one of the things the AFL-CIO has recognized is that there is a huge number of Latino workers that, number one, belong to unions, number two, need unions, and so, yes, I mean, I think the AFL-CIO is more and more understanding that they have to take a more positive role in Latin American affairs than they've taken in the past. There are some awfully skeletons in the history of the AFL-CIO in the way that they've worked closely with the U.S. government to really undermine unions in other countries, including Latin America.
Yes.
And this is where a guy like this guy, Jack Otero, comes into. So some of the old Cold War warriors, there are still some of them down there, and many of them they've gotten rid of, but there's got to be a lot more of them gotten rid of. Yeah,
our man in Buenos Aires, or our man in those parts. Is it true? This is a big theater question, but I get the impression, looking around the world, I mean, these guys are big, and Coca-Cola is, and they have a rival. I think they're a rival if they're not in bed together, Pepsi, et cetera. Is it, they had, sort of have these, some of these places divided, right? I get Chile, you get Puerto Rico, you get, is that,
on the one
is
hand,
that impression correct?
Yes, there certainly is deals like that. On the other hand, it's also very competitive. And Coca-Cola will cut any of their competitors' throats to gain the market, and vice versa. We've actually seen Pepsi and Cadbury Schweppes move right in on some of these college campuses where Coca kicked out.
Good.
Around
but,
this Columbia issue.
Let that be a little warning to them.
Right now, the enemies of Coke are our friends. And if they're doing some things real bad, we'll take them on next. But Coca-Cola, without a doubt, has the worst record of all these beverage companies, and they're the only company that's the focus of this human rights lawsuit.
Good. Well, with that, we're going to close up. Ray, thanks very, very much. We've been talking to Ray Rogers, and we're glad you could come in. And next you go to, well, you're going to be at 246 Bloor Street West, if people want to hurry over there and catch the meeting.
Well, thanks so much for the opportunity here, Phil, and to speak out to the University of Toronto community. It's been a great experience.
Yeah, okay, we're going to keep track. Please, we'll be talking to you and your friends. We'll know where to call you. We'll make sure we keep up to date.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. We hope you'll be with us next week.